When I was in YU, I majored in psychology, and one of the things that I learned about in one of the courses that I took was something called the thematic aperception test. What's a thematic aperception test? You don't want to raise your hand if you know what it is. When you go to a psychologist, and the psychologist wants to know what's going on inside your life, what's going on inside your head. And they're trying to get out what the inner makeup of how you run your life goes, or what are you dealing with, what are you grappling with. So he'll show you a picture of some scene, and that scene could have a few people in it. Somebody in it might be upset, somebody happy. It could be a different type of scenery. And a psychologist would say to the client, tell me what's going on in this picture. What do you see over here? And the client will start to tell a story of what's going on in the picture. And somehow, through the story that the client tells the psychologist, the psychologist is able to read into what's going on in his life and how this person works. Now, the client knows that the psychologist is trying to do this. He's like, you're for sure trying to psychologize me and figure me out. I'm gonna stay away from anything that has going on in my personal life, and I'm just going to tell you a different story. But the test still works. You all heard probably of the inkblot test, where they show you some type of an inkblot, and they ask you what you see over here in the inkblot, and you tell the psychologist what you see. And through that also, we see how the person works and what's going on inside of him. What we see from these tests is that when a person is presented with something, whether it's a picture, whether it's a book that they're reading, when they're interpreting it, they're not necessarily interpreting it for what it actually is, but they're projecting their own personality onto what they're taking in, and they're interpreting it through why they would do the things that are in that book, why they would do the things that are going on in that picture, why they would be upset, why they would be happy. And it's impossible for a person to separate himself when he's interpreting something that he's faced with. He can't take his own personality out of it. When I came back from my year in Israel, so I went to Yeshiva Flatbush, and they have a seminar where the people that went to Israel come back and make a seminar with the seniors of Flatbush. So I went back to be an advisor on the senior Shabbaton, senior seminar. And one of the sessions that they had on Friday night, we were sitting in a circle, a bunch of boys and girls, and the teacher, Mrs. Boy Andrew, she handed around a piece of paper. And on the paper it said the following types of people that you might meet in your life. It says, teacher, ruler, father, king, creator, judge, friend, shepherd, punisher, coach, destroyer, all different principal, all different things like that. And he said, everybody think to yourself, how do you view Hashem? How do you view Hashem? What is he to you? Pick three of the things in the list. List them from one to three. How you look at Hashem in your life. So I decided while everybody was sitting in the circle, I'm going to do a different activity. I want to try to think if the people that I know here in the circle, could I guess what they're going to say? How they view Hashem, what Hashem is to them. So in my group, I was an advisor for that. I obviously made very random groups. And there was people that you never would have put together. There was one guy that was clearly socially very awkward, very off. When you would talk to him, he would always answer with like a dictionary definition or a quote from Encyclopedia Britannica. Very, very, you couldn't see any emotion on him. Never cracked a smile. Very plain like that. So I figured, okay, he's going to say things that are very definitive. Creator, king, judge, something like that. There was somebody else in the group. It was exactly the opposite. It was very social, very warm, very friendly, popular. Everybody liked him. He was nice to everybody, only a kind word. So I thought, okay, he's probably going to say something like father, also king, because he has a conscience and he has a feelings of right and wrong, and you know, something else like that. The girls in the group, I figured, this girl who I knew, she was an advisor, she's probably going to say something like best friend, confidant, father, like a bunch of mushy type of things. They don't see things like in that kind of way. I don't remember all the guesses that I had, but when they went around in the circle and people said their answers, you could really have guessed every person beforehand if you did it like this. You hit everybody spot on. Everybody related and saw Hashem how you would have expected that them, with their personality, would have. So I once started to tell this idea over on a shidduch date that I was on. I didn't marry the girl, so I could make fun of her. And and as I started to say this, so she's like, wow, that's beautiful. So everybody can relate to Hashem. An angry person can relate to the anger of Hashem. And somebody who's like into honor and kavod can relate to the kavod of Hashem. And somebody who's into mercy relate to the mercy of Hashem. Who said, no, that's not the pshat. I said, we know that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way that Hashem interacts within the world, is with the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim. Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem V'chanon, Echapayim V'chesed V'emes. That Hashem works within this world, He runs this world through the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim. We know the traits of how He runs the world. And therefore, you could only relate to Hashem, and you will best relate to Hashem, the more similarly you are to those Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim. The more that a person themselves has Midos, the more that a person is caring, giving, the more that a person has feelings of right and wrong, wants to do what's right, wants to appreciate, wants to think, so they're more likely to understand the things that they go through in their life, and they're more likely to recognize the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You could have two people go through the same thing, and one person will say, why is God doing this to me? Why is He punishing me? Why is this happening to me? And be frustrated and angry. Another person could be saying, what is Hashem trying to teach me? What am I supposed to learn from this? Or, whoa, I wonder what He just saved me from? Or, what am I getting an atonement for? And they both went through exactly the same thing. So what made one person have one reaction, the other person have the other reaction? It's simply because of this. They're projecting themselves onto God, and they're explaining why would they do this to somebody if that would ever happen. And they know they would never hurt anybody. They're giving, caring, merciful. Of course I would be trying to teach them something or save them from something or give them an atonement for something if that was always going to be better for them. And somebody who's an angry person doesn't think like that. So they're going to assume, oh, God must be punishing me. Like, what did I do wrong? Why is He on my back? Why is He doing this to me? And who is more correct? The one that made himself more similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I once had a thought that in Az Yashir, we know that when Klai Yisrael came to the Yam Suf, so they said Az Yashir. They had a spiritual revelation where everybody had Nevuah, everybody had prophecy, and even the simplest of people in Klai Yisrael, it says in the Gemara, had some of the highest levels of prophecy, similar to Yechezkel ben Buzi. And one of the things they said when they said Az Yashir is, Zekeli va'anvehu. This is my God, as if they could see Him. They could almost point as if to say, they felt so close, it was so real of an experience. Va'anvehu. So what's va'anvehu? So one of the pshats in va'anvehu, if I had a blackboard, I would write on the board, it looks like a conjugation of the words va'ani hu. I need to be like Him. This is one of the sources where we see that a person has to go in the ways of Hashem. Just like Hashem is Rachum, I have to be Rachum. Just like Hashem is Chanon, I have to be Chanon. Hashem is merciful, Hashem is giving, Hashem is patient, I have to be that way too. And we learn that from the word Va'anveyu. It's a funny place to learn Midos from. Suddenly, in the middle of Az Yashir, right after the word Zekeli. And one time it hit me what I think that the Pshat was. Here you had all of Klai Yisrael, they were on the 49th level of Tumah when they left Mitzrayim. On a very low level. And suddenly you give them all prophecy and they suddenly see God right in front of them. And now they realize what was getting until now, why I didn't see Hashem until now, and why now I suddenly see Hashem. What was getting in the way between me and Hashem until now was my own personality traits and my own lackings and the own dirt that I have on me. And now that I'm shown this prophecy, basically Hashem got rid of all that for a moment so that I could see Him. So Zekeli, this is my God, I see Him, and now I know why I didn't see Him until now, but I knew I need to be like Him from now on. If I want to see Him in the future, if I want to have that closeness, if I want to understand Him, if I want to experience Him, I need to make myself more like Him because only then will I be able to see Him. That was what was getting in between me and Him until now. The Ramah gives a mashal. It's like if somebody's looking through a looking glass or through glasses and you have dirt on your glasses. So it might look like the thing that you're looking at is dirty, but really the dirt is on yourself. When you're not, when you're misinterpreting Hashem or you're not even seeing Hashem, the dirt that you're seeing over there is really the dirt that's on ourself that we need to clean off. There's a Rambam in Hilchot Shabbos that says something unexpected. He gives a word that's unexpected. I'll read to you. He's explaining the halacha that you know that when somebody's life might be in danger, definitely when it is in danger, So you're not allowed to delay on being Mechala Shabbos. You have to be Mechala Shabbos to save this person's life, even if it's just a suffix that his life might be in danger. And then the Rambam goes ahead and says, and refers to those people that are too firm, so to speak, to break Shabbos. They don't want to break Shabbos, and they don't try to save this person's life. What title would you give to such a person? What would you call him? Somebody that was too firm, they don't want to break Shabbos, and therefore they don't save that person's life. What title would you give him? What name would you give him? You'd say he's like too much of a tzaddik. It's out of place. He's a shota. He's crazy. He's not normal. You know what the Rambam calls him? The Rambam says, Ve'elu haminim, those apikorsim, she'omim she'zechil o Shabbos ve'aser, those apikorsim that says that it's chil o Shabbos, and I don't want to save his life, it's only a suffix, and they think that it's aser. So the Rambam calls them apikorsim, he calls them minim. Apikorsis, the opposite, he believes in Hashem too much. He's thinking about it, he doesn't want to break Shabbos. But the Rambam calls him an apikoros. Why is that? To believe in Hashem doesn't just mean to believe there's a God in this world who gave us all the halachos that we have to follow. You have to believe in the God of Yud Gimel Midas Harachamim, Hashem Hashem Karach Machanon Erech Apayim Rav Chesed VeEmes. And if you would think that His Torah would make you let a person just die like that for the Shabbos, then you're believing in the wrong God. You're believing in the wrong. That's not belief in God, and you're not Bikoros. And further, he says in the Rambam, Halamadata she'in mishpatei Torah nekama ba'olam. The Torah and the mitzvah, 613 mitzvahs, they're not 613 punishments, 613 revenges against you to make your life difficult. The opposite. Elo rachamim v'chesed v'shalom ba'olam. The Torah and every single mitzvah is an extension, a flow of the rachamim of Hashem, the chesed of Hashem, the shalom of Hashem. And if you miss that point, you're not believing in the right God. When you have these Arabs like that, just want to kill, and they're doing it based on their belief in a God, that's already not believing in a God of Yugim Amitaz HaRachamim. It says by the people of Nineveh, there's a pasuk that says that when Yonah finally warned them, and they were scared of being destroyed, so it says, that when it describes their tshuva process, it says about them, V'yizaku al Hashem b'chazaka. They screamed Hashem b'chazaka, a phrase that you don't find, I don't think, anywhere else in Tanakh. So what does it mean to scream to Hashem b'chazaka? There's a midrash that says that what did the people of Nineveh do? They took their wives and their children and their animals. They tied them up. They took a knife in their hands. They held it next to their wife and their kid's head. And they said, we heard you're a God of rachamim. If you don't accept our tshuva, we're going to kill our wife and our kids right now. Sounds like Arabs. It's weird. So you see that they knew that God is a God of rachamim. And they're using that in such a warped, disgusting way to threaten him to get what it is that they want. If he's a God of rachamim, you don't have to do that. I'll accept your tshuva without that. You don't have to worry about that. But if you yourself don't have rachamim, you're not going to come to that conclusion. Your lack of rachamim and your crookedness is still going to, you're going to interpret everything in the wrong way. Even God's own mercy, you're going to warp and mess up. There's no shortcuts about it. A person has to work on himself as a person, on his Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, on his humility, on his being thankful towards others, on his recognizing others, on his giving to others, on his being willing to listen to people that are over him. All those take our affect our belief in Hashem also, and how we live as a Jew with emunah in this world. To believe in God, some of the personality traits that are involved is that a person has to be willing to say, my life is not my own. And it's my life is not all about making myself more comfortable all the time, doing all the things that I like to do and that I want to do. That's not how I decide every decision that I make throughout my life. When somebody accepts upon themselves believing in God, they're accepting like Chai Yisrael did, Naseh V'Nishma. You're God, you created me, everything is yours, I don't know anything, and whatever you say, I'm going to do. I want to learn about it. I want to understand it. I want to identify with it so that I could do it even with more enthusiasm, so I could understand you even more. But the fact that I'm going to do it or not is it's the humble and the correct approach when somebody says, I'm going to do it. And when somebody is somebody that likes to thank others, they're looking to appreciate, they want to know who did something for them, they're automatically, they're not going to be able to go through their life and just ignore that they have all these things. They're going to be looking for who did this for me and how did this happen and what do they want from me and what do I need to do? And what's going to determine whether somebody's going to do that or not is going to be their midos. And therefore, a lot of emunah isn't as much based on whether you were taught the right proofs of God's existence or not, proofs of God's existence or not. That might be an important stage, a little bit in the beginning of the process, to be able to learn about it. But whether somebody's going to see the truth or not see the truth and continue to live with the truth, very much and a lot is affected by the midos. That's like what we spoke about last week with Avraham Avinu's chesed. It wasn't by chance that it was specifically he that brought belief in one God back to the world. Sometimes people have a difficulty. They don't like authoritative figures. They don't like being told what to do. And sometimes that can come because of the way they were raised in their house, because maybe their parents were very rough on them, very tough on them all the time, and they just built a distaste towards that. Or teachers were extra tough on them that built a distaste within them. Or maybe sometimes it even could come from the opposite, that nobody ever gave them any, you know, rules or regulations. They always had whatever they wanted. They're not used to being told what to do, not used to being limited in any kind of a way. And therefore it becomes very hard and constricting and unnatural when suddenly they're being told what to do by the Torah. And Halacha is telling them what to do, or a rabbi is, you know, telling them this is what the Torah says to do. And the natural reaction is to want to just push it away. Leave me alone. I'm enjoying my independence and my freedom and my own little bubble of a world. But that's coming from not wanting to recognize where things came from, not wanting to listen to something greater than you, that you're the be-it, end-all, and center of your entire universe. That's something that we all have to work on breaking out of on every level. This isn't just, this is not me saying this too, obviously, and wherever anybody is, we all have this feeling that until here I let you in, but this is my area. Like, I'm giving myself space over here. So there's no us. God gave us all of us, and we have to give all of what he gave to us back to him. Guys, have a good job.